Before we get started with Steve this morning, I'm Peter. I'm the president of the Baltimore Babe Ruth chapter. So from a personal standpoint, thank you guys for all for coming. In the post-pandemic world, you know, this was supposed to happen 24 months ago. So we appreciate it. The city appreciates it. And hopefully so far everything's been going smoothly for you. So just to let you know, this is Constellation C. The presentation at 8:30 from Sam Zigner will not be happening. He had COVID and did not make the trip. So if we run over a little bit, that's okay, because the next one will be at 9. So much appreciated. If you guys need anything, if you want to know more about our chapter, feel free to sign up and get our emails. We're pretty active for a chapter. It's only been around 7 years. So Steve will take over. I think he's waiting for his co-presenter, but I'll let him start, and I'll be the timing guy, and but we can run a little longer so we can have extra time for questions for those who don't need to run to another presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, Peter.
Morning, everybody. Good morning. I'm appreciative of this turnout at 8 in the morning. I'm not at all a morning person. I'm a night owl, but I'm glad to be here and see some familiar faces as well as others I'll get to know. I'm waiting for my co-presenter, Elliot Hines, often called. We've co-presented before. We chose this topic because we wanted to do something Baltimore related. That's something that I've often done when I've been able to present. And so we hit upon this topic because in 1960, these four pitchers whom we're about to discuss burst on the scene. And although not all of them were rookies in 1960, just for clarity, what happened was it was the first time the four were in the rotation together. So we're going to talk about some statistics and other measures of comparing things. And so I do have hard copies, but they're not in color. I think this in color will liven what we're about to do. I'm reminded of a 1970s song, Fly Robin Fly, if anybody knows that. I'm really a Rolling Stones enthusiast, but that's a whole other story. So so what happened was Milt Pappas and Jack Fisher were already up with the team prior to 1960. The other two, Barber and Estrada, were rookies. So here we go to talk about what we want to see. And I found some nice graphics. So those were the four players whom we're going to talk about. Oh, the Big E has arrived. You know, both big Yankee fans, so don't throw tomatoes at us. So I'm going to do part of this, and then the Big E will come out of the bullpen. So he was wearing number 25. That's a whole other story. It's 5 squared, by the way. Little math for you. So, yeah, I teach all sorts of math. I use baseball in my classes all the time. So my students will find out the first day that I'm a big Yankee fan. So the Boston fans, in all due respect, will be low-key. But I've become more tolerant, I have to admit. Sorry, Big E. Okay, so one could argue that the 60 Baby Birds helped to start to create a legacy for what came later. And the Big E will have some things to say about that shortly. Oh, you got a Jeter shirt. That's good. Okay, the first prime number. Okay, you got to watch out for me there. I'm dangerous with that. Okay, I found some interesting graphics that caught my attention. And by the way, I'm rooting for the Orioles tonight because They're playing the Red Sox, so. All right. So, I'm sorry?
The last place Red Sox.
That's even better. Sorry, Mark. Okay.
Red Sox fans are also rooting for the Orioles.
I'm sorry?
Red Sox fans are also rooting for the Orioles tonight.
I understand. Well, congrats to the Orioles. So maybe I'll find a 1960 hat at the ballpark. So I'm going to begin with Chuck Estrada, who was a rookie. He had had a good strikeout season in the minor leagues in 1958. Can everybody see this, first of all? And can you hear me? Okay, thank you. All right, so Estrada had a really good season with 18 wins, making the All-Star team, and also the Sporting News Pitcher of the Year with a 3.58 ERA. Although we'll see shortly statistically how Estrada compares to the other three of the baby birds. Now, unfortunately for Estrada, and later when the Big E talks about Barber, Barber had a decent length career. Estrada did not. His first 2 years were good, with 18 wins and then 15 wins, and then wildness and a sore arm curtailed a promising career. So we'll see later if should Estrada have been chosen as the Sporting News Pitcher of the Year. His 18 wins led the team, and we'll talk more about some other statistical data very shortly. Okay, and that's a picture of Estrada. I wanted to have some visuals for you. So he was a Californian and had to adjust to the cold springs here and up here in the Northeast. Well, Maryland's not Northeast, is it? Mid-Atlantic. Okay, good. Now, next in the batting order, the Big E is going to talk about Steve Barber and Milt Pappas. So the Big E, you're up at the plate. You ready to pick one out?
Definitely. Thanks, Steve. By the way, let's go Orioles this weekend. Just to show you where my heart is and brain is. Okay. Oh, don't drop this. Okay, from the Nyer James Guide to Pitchers. I want to read you something. After the 1960 season, Time magazine brought six pitchers to Miami with a high-speed camera and attempted to determine who was the hardest throwing pitcher in baseball. The six pitchers were Barber, Drysdale, Koufax, Ryan Duren, Herb Score, and Bob Turley. Barber won the contest, throwing a pitch clocked at 95.55 miles per hour. Okay, he was probably the most talented of those four pitchers, but he was also the unluckiest. All right, he did have some good stats, and he was among the top five in league leaders, like 1960, his rookie year. He was third in the lowest opponent's batting average, and he led the league with eight. Okay, and in 1961, he led with eight shutouts. He led with 13. He was third with 18 wins, third in complete games, and also again fewest hits allowed per game. He was third. Opponent's batting average. He was fourth with an opponent's batting average of 218. I like that number. That's my birthday. Okay. Okay. And in 1963, he got a 20-game season. He was fifth in the league. But he was traded to the Yankees in 1967, but his arm was on the verge of going kablooey. His lifetime ERA was 3.36, and the adjusted ERA was 1.05. Could have been a little better. Hopefully, especially with the Yankees. He was 121-106 lifetime, only a 5.33 winning percentage. Okay, and his right-handed teammate, who was probably the most fortunate of the four, maybe not the most talented, but just steady and consistent, was Mel Pappas. His career 19. What's that?
Excuse me, everybody.
This is the technical guy. I'm not.
I'm not an expert, but I know enough.
Okay. All right. Pappas debuted in 1957. Just came up for a cup of coffee. His full career. Was 1957 to 1973. His Orioles career was 1957 to 1965. All right, and he was involved in that famous trade for Frank Robinson. Maybe all us common fans at the time, teenagers, what are they doing? what the Reds trade Frank Robinson? Well, Baltimore was on the verge of establishing Jim Palmer. So in hindsight, it was a pretty good trade. All right. In 1959, Pappas was tied for the league in complete games. He didn't exactly light up the stats columns, but he was just steady, consistent. 1960, fourth in winning percentage. 1961, second in opponent's batting average. 64 was his best year when he was 16-7, and he was fourth in winning percentage, tied for complete games in third. Okay, and even in 1965, his final year with Baltimore, his adjusted ERA was fifth. Now, okay, Pappas is not a Hall of Famer. You're not gonna get to the Hall of Fame as a starting pitcher if your best season was 17 wins. But he does compare favorably with Jim Bunning. Okay, Bunning only won 20 game season, all right, and they probably pitched against each other a number of times. Okay, Pappas had a 5.60 winning percentage, Bunning 5.44. Okay, and there was only a 4-point difference in adjusted ERA, 114 to 110 in favor of Bunning. And in the win shares, okay, if anybody followed Bill James's win shares book, I broke it down both hitters, which is not applicable today, and pitchers, which is. And I broke it down on a 200 inning basis. Okay, there's again only a 4-point difference in Bunning's favor. Okay, 13.6 by my system to 13.2, and Pappas 43 shutouts to Bunning's 40. So Pappas comparing well with a Hall of Famer. Pappas wasn't a Hall of Famer, but was Jim Bunning. Okay, Steve?
Thank you, Big E. And so we'll illuminate those stats a little later. So I think that the point about Pappas that the Big E was making was very consistent, multiple times a 15-game winner, made a few All-Star teams. And just to make one other point before we move on, that for those of us who remember the trade for Frank Robinson, it seemed very one-sided at the time. and maybe we'll, when the Q&A people might want to comment on that or other things. But, you know, also one of the things Biggie and I talked about was that in some of Pappas's locations, Wrigley Field, for instance, he's pitching in a hitter's park, and Cincinnati was as well. Baltimore in 1960 slightly favored the batter, excuse me, but not by very much. Now, the last of the four was the infamous Jack Fisher. I was looking for an Orioles picture, but that's what I found. So, 1960, which was not a rookie year for Fisher, ditto as we heard for Pappas. 1960 was Fisher's only year with an above 500 winning percent. And so his stats weren't that bad compared to the rest of his teammates, but some of you might remember, as I do, those infamous early 60s Mets. You know, when Casey Stengel supposedly said, "I manage good, but boy, did they play bad." And I remember them in the Polo Grounds, too. So, one of the things that was mentioned yesterday at the Ruth session that a lot of us were at was that Fisher gave up Maris's 60th home run, Pappas gave up his 59th. And then Fisher also gave up Ted Williams' last home run in 1960. So, of course, if you're playing for those early Mets, some of those bad records like might look worse than they really should have been. So there's not a whole lot to say about Fisher, but his record, at least in 1960, was pretty good. Those quartet of Oriole baby birds, as they were called, helped lead the Orioles into second place behind the Yankees. But from some research I did, I saw that they were in a tight pennant race with the Yankees until mid-September, until the Yankees, as they often did, swept the Orioles in a mid-September four-game series, and the Yankees pulled away. But it was not a piece of cake for the Yankees that year, and the Orioles had a very good record, because after the Yankees and the Pirates, and that's a World Series I still want to forget about. I'm still sore about, probably you can guess what I'm sore about in the seventh game. So, yeah, I never got over that as a 10-year-old. That's a whole other story. But I think you have to give the Orioles credit. This is a picture of a 1960 yearbook. By the way, I do have some hard copies of this, although they're not in color, so I thought you'd like the visual images. Now, I think this might put some things in perspective. A summary chart for 1960. Yes, please?
2 minutes.
Thank you. Appreciate it. So you can see from the chart by different measures that Estrada has the wins and complete games, but in terms of ERA, adjusted ERA, and wins above replacement, you could maybe argue that was he the best pitcher in the league, let alone on his own team. I think in those days, before these more advanced stats came about, that people looked at the basic stats. Now we know more. Now, so as I summarized before, they gave the Yankees a run for their money, and they had some all-stars, Jim Gentile, who would hit a lot of home runs in 61. Ron Hansen led the team with 22 home runs. Brooks with the glove man. And so they had a strong team. Now, finally, with these references to add to what we've done. This is what the Big E was talking about before. Certain books show slightly different metrics, like with ERA plus and wins above replacement. But, excuse me, in other respects, as the Big E said, in terms of win percent and other factors, the comparison that he made, I think, is a pretty good one. And also, if we had more time, we could have gotten into Pappas versus Drysdale. Bill James wrote about Drysdale, and maybe that's a topic for another time. So that's our presentation, and we can add to these references the Windshears book, and so thus flew the baby birds in 1960 along with the rest of the team. And as we heard, by the mid to late 60s, the Orioles were really starting to take off. Okay, so let's stop for any Q&A if anybody would like to ask anything of either of us. You're welcome, Seamus.
What were the four baby birds with?
I ran out of space to put that in, but that's a good question, that in terms of how the whip would have compared to the team in the league, I would think they would have been pretty good. The Orioles team ERA was 3.52 compared to the league ERA in the AL in 60 of 3.83. But we had a little more time to check that. That's an excellent question. I would think their whip probably would have been pretty good. Good question. Yes, please. And your name is?
Bruce.
Bruce, go ahead.
Talked about the Sporting News or Sports Illustrated test of the speed of the six pitchers in 1960. Was that measured at the speed that the ball crossed the plate or from the release point? Like they have today.
Big E, do you want to talk about that?
Release point. Start, and then when it crossed the plate.
So it's equivalent to the modern measurements.
Very close.
Good, thank you. Anybody else? Yes, in the front, and then we'll go back there. And your name is?
Steve.
Oh, good.
What was the influence of Paul Richards as a manager? Was that his? Did he usually want to encourage younger pitchers, and was that something he did? Was to start the younger pitchers on that team?
I think Richards was a good influence. This was the first winning season that the franchise had in Baltimore, and Richards managed for a number of years. Hank Bauer, of course, came in later on. So I would think Richards was a pretty good influence, because the Orioles did have a number of other young pitchers like Wally Bunker in 64, the Big E mentioned Palmer. You want to comment on that about Paul Richards, Big E?
I don't know enough about Paul Richards. I'm not a Paul Richards, crazy person.
Okay. It's a good question, because in terms of innovation, some of you might have heard or read that he designed this big glove for Gus Triandos to catch Hoyt Wilhelm's knuckleball. So I think that's a very good question and worthy of further research about Paul Richards' influence. But in terms of having these young pitchers come through the pipeline with varying degrees of success, as we talked about, he did seem to be a good influence, but I'll check that further.
Steve, one thing I forgot to mention. Mel Pappas today, and even before, would be a solid number two or three pitcher in any rotation. Not a number one, but a solid number two or three pitcher. Hey, when Pappas took the mound, you could mostly count on the win, not definitely, but very likely. A number two or three pitcher. That was Bill Pappas.
That's a good comment, Big E. There's a question back there, and your name is again?
Bob Brown.
Please, go ahead. Good.
I just wanted to point out, you mentioned the four-game sweep of the Orioles, but the Yankees actually won the final 15 games of the season that year, and that was that's what did everything.
And that's something the Yankees had done on other seasons and would do again. So, yeah, I appreciate that comment that they had to shake off the persistent birds, as they also had to do with the Tigers the next year. Good. Then your name, go ahead, please.
Mark Milliken.
Go ahead.
Steve Barber, he went on to win 15, 18, and 20 games for the Orioles. And I think his biggest disappointment, Steve, was that he didn't get to pitch in the 66 World Series, because he led the team the first half roughly 10 wins, 2 losses, I think, or something like that. And the second half, he was pretty much shelving. He didn't get to pitch in the World Series after all, you know, those 5 or 6 years of being on the team. So.
That's a good comment. You know, it's not easy to get to a series, so I appreciate your bringing that up. Big E, do you want to comment about his question about Barber?
Well, I think, Wally Bunker just came up 2 years ago before and won 19 games. Can't remove a 19-game winner. And Jim Palmer was on, I'm a Jim Palmer fan, okay? Palmer was on the road to greatness. Somebody saw that he's in there. Dave McNally was on the road, but let's say McNally was maybe ascending, Barber was descending. All right. Steve had a, unfortunately, his arm went to blue.
All right, that's good. That was a good comment. Thank you. Peter, we're sort of out of time now.
Yes, just to let you guys know, the 8:30 presentation that was going to be in here by Sam Zigner is not happening. Sam was sick with COVID and was unable to travel before.
All right, thank you. Anybody else? Damien.
Off topic, but coming back to the beginning, Why Robin Fly was 3.5 minutes long. But how many words are in the song?
I think it's just Fly Robin Fly.
How much is the sky? 8 words in 3.5 minutes.
Nice. Good word, Damien. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.